Hello and welcome to episode 77 of A Little Bird Told Me, the only podcast freelance writers, editors and proofreaders will ever need. We're two full-time freelance wordsmiths and we're here to shed some light on the sometimes tricky world of working for yourself, saving you from self-employment mishaps and guiding you to a higher state of freelance zen. In these fortnightly episodes, you'll encounter loads of tips, tricks, and topics designed to make your life easier and help you to become the best freelance writer you can be. So go on, head over to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com and there you can subscribe. We've got iTunes, RSS Podcatcher, and Stitcher Smart Radio options, so there's no excuse not to. And if you're a Facebooky sort of freelancer, we're on there as well. You can catch us at facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast for even more informative links throughout the week. I am Laurie Hartshorn, and this week I'm here without my usual co-host, Philippa. It's time for my solo episodes, besides which the lovely Pip is sunning herself, yes, sunning herself, at the content marketing show in London. I think we can all agree she's basically a bit of a slacker, either that or I'm jealous. Jealous to be stuck here behind my desk while she's off gallivanting. So yes, basically she's a slacker. So what I'm going to be talking about this episode is how to cope with a particular kind of client creep. Basically, what to do if your clients won't stop bugging you. Now, we've all been there, haven't we, when a particular client starts to overstep boundaries and bombard us with communications that are either unnecessary, intrusive, or just beyond the scope of what we've agreed to. Now, it's no fun, and it can be pretty hard to get yourself out of it, or at least it can feel that way. Now, infuriatingly, the answer to this problem is the same solution required for many of the hiccups that freelance writers encounter, and that's preparation. So don't get your knickers in a twist if you've already found yourself stuck smack bang in the middle of a situation of this kind. I mean, it might be a bit late for you to prepare now if you're in the middle of it, but it's good stuff to know for next time. And because we all have been in a situation where we've either failed to set the effective boundaries, and if you haven't, you've not been freelancing long enough, or where we've let those boundaries slide, what I'm going to do first is look at how to extricate yourself from the grasp of a Peter client, that's a pain in the ass client to the uninitiated, and then after that, what I'm going to do is move on to setting boundaries from the word go, and just preventing yourself from falling into the same trap in future. So first up then, getting yourself out of the grasp of a Peter client. You've got yourself a client. Maybe they're your first client, maybe not. Maybe they're new to you, but again, maybe not. Unfortunately, the land of client creep is a big one and the borders are always open. It's not like it's difficult to get in. So picture the scene. You've signed up to do some copywriting work for a client. You discussed what you could offer, how much time it would take you, and how much it would cost your client. You explained everything clearly, the client was happy, and you thought you'd hooked yourself a lovely big fish. Somewhere along the line, though, things have started to change. Now, whether it's a sudden turn of events or it's something that's been a bit of a gradual shift, your client is now a major pain in the proverbial. They email you all the time, they get fretty when you don't respond within a few minutes, they ask for your mobile number, your Twitter handle, your Google Plus address, your Facebook page. They start calling, texting, IMing you, and you know, when you don't respond to their emails or calls, they contact you out of hours despite knowing that you're not working, and they've become experts in the art of can you just. Now, it's a nightmare situation, and it's one that can lead to a significant pile of stress for any freelance writer. So something has to be done, but what? First off, act as quickly as you can on these things. These, sadly, aren't the kinds of situations that will go away by themselves. So as soon as you notice there's an actual problem, plan a solution. Now, that's not to say that the first time you feel irritated or resentful of a client, that you should get in there and lay some smack down. What you should do, though, is just make a note of any red flags with your clients so that you've got a record of incidents if a problem does develop. And that's a record just for yourself as much as for anything else. So, did a client call you on Friday despite you telling them you were away from the office? Note it down. Did you come back from a long lunch to find a trail of increasingly annoyed messages in your inbox? Has a client suddenly turned up on your personal Twitter feed on a Saturday night demanding a response to a work email they sent last thing on a Friday? Note all of these things down and get ready to act if they're serious enough or they're persistent enough. Don't ignore it and hope it'll go away. Now, the head in the sand approach can be a tempting one when you work for yourself, because you don't have anyone else to do your dirty work, and you don't have the support of a wider organisation. You can feel pretty vulnerable, and actually quite embarrassed or guilty when it comes to laying down the law with clients who cross boundaries. I don't know why this is, but it is. The freelance embarrassment is a persistent thing, but the longer you leave it, the worse this kind of situation will get. Boundary crossing clients are pushing their luck, and the old saying does ring true: if you give them an inch, they will take a mile. And if you let your clients get away with pushy, intrusive, entitled behaviour, the mark's made, and it will always, always, always get worse unless you put a stop to it. A good way to kind of empower yourself to put a stop to it is to picture yourself as a business, not a person. Now, a key part of learning to be assertive is to start thinking of yourself as a small business rather than kind of an intimidated freelancer behind the computer screen or at the other end of the phone. You have working hours like any business. You have a range of customers just like any business. And it's reasonable for you, like any other business, to be busy. Now think about it. Would you phone a printing company and get in a huff if they weren't available to take your call? Would you text your dentist out of hours to ask them something? Would you hunt out the manager of a Monday to Friday organisation on their personal Twitter account to ask them about an email that you sent them during the week? Now the answer obviously should be no. Please tell me it's no. So you should think very, very carefully indeed before letting your customers get away with the same kinds of your behaviour. Now, the second point is to remember that they're your customer, not your employer. Now, regular listeners of the podcast might notice something's changed in the way that I'm describing the people we work for this week. Ordinarily, I describe clients just as clients. But for a topic like this, I think it's really helpful, actually, to view your clients as customers. It's effectively the same thing, but as a term, it's far less equivocal. There's something less equivocal about the word customer, because that's what your clients are. They're customers, and more specifically, they're customers, not your employer. They pay you for a service or a product, whether that's a long-term ongoing project, regular work each week, or a one-off piece of work just in isolation. So while your customers, clients, are entitled to query things with you or to communicate with you when necessary, they do not have an unlimited claim on your time. An employer pays you a full-time salary, they fund things like sick pay, holiday pay, maternity pay, and a pension. But even then, you wouldn't think well of an employer who constantly overstepped your boundaries and hounded you about work. In fact, you'd probably take it up with HR. Now, your customers have far less claim on you than an employer does. If somebody's paying you for, say, a 500-word blog post, but they're keeping you on the phone for 45 minutes to discuss it, there's an issue. If somebody's paying you to manage their social media for an hour every weekday, and they want to know why you didn't respond to a tweet sent on Saturday night, there's a problem. If your client pays you for ad hoc pieces of copywriting work, and then they text you on your day off, and they know it's your day off, there's a problem. They've overstepped boundaries, and they've lost sight of what it means to pay you for a product or service. Basically, they've forgotten that they're your customer. So the simple solution is learn to say no. If it was that simple, we'd all do it. But unfortunately, it is the solution. So we've done all the assertiveness talk, and we've spoken now about how your customers are your customers and not your employers, and how you don't owe them unlimited time. But sooner or later, you have to bite the bullet and you have to learn to say no. Now, there are ways and means of doing it, and you'll find that different ways suit different situations, but at the end of the day, however you do it, you have to put a firm stop to clingy client behaviour. First off, you can say no with your actions. You don't have to come all the way out and say it, you know, so don't worry, you can stay in your comfort zone at first, and sometimes it's best to do that as an initial course of action. So stop answering communications when you don't have time. Stop answering communications when you're officially off work. Just stop it completely. It's really, really easy to fall back into the habit of stopping what you're doing to answer a snippy email or to text a client back if they catch you at sort of 7 p.m. on a Friday, but you are setting yourself up for trouble. So be strict with yourself, even if it really bugs you all weekend the first few times, and ignore communications until it's an appropriate time to answer them. And by an appropriate time, I mean your working hours. Being unavailable is a good way to train your clients. That makes them sound like performing poodles, but really you do have to train clients. If you think your customers are getting needy, just leave it a little bit longer before you call them back or email them back. Don't respond to requests and queries sent via inappropriate channels. Let's say a client's texted you on your personal number to see whether they've, you know, their emails come through, or they've contacted you on your personal social media to check up on how something's coming along. Don't deal with that. Take it back to email. If necessary, say something. But just train them by not giving them what they want when they want it. Second point is to stop apologising. If your client asks where you were, don't apologise. Quite simple. You've got a business to run. You are their supplier. They buy things from you. You know, it might be bits of content, might be bits of social media management, editing, whatever. They're your customer. You know, you don't go to a shop and if it's shut, you expect an apology. No, it just doesn't happen that way. So treat yourself the same way. Make it clear that you either had other commitments or that they contacted you outside of work hours. Now, it can be easier said than done, don't get me wrong. If your client is irritated or even downright rude about the situation, it's really easy to feel intimidated. But that's where all the assertiveness stuff comes in. Auto-apologising could be another easy trap to fall into. Sorry, I just popped out. Sorry, I was just dealing with another client. Sorry, I don't work weekends. It just rolls off the tongue. But it's not doing you any favours, so bite your tongue and chop it out. And by chop it out, I mean the behaviour, not the tongue. As long as you're polite and you're professional and you let your clients know what's what, you are beyond reasonable reproach. And the same goes for if a client uses your personal number, social media feeds, email address to chase you up. You are entitled to let them know that this isn't appropriate. Now again, no apologies or explanations needed. You just need to point out that's your personal account, that's your personal number, whatever, and that the way to reach you is during office hours through work channels. Then never respond to further communications outside of those boundaries. If you need to bring up the issue again in future, do it during work hours via your work channel. Stick to the rules that you have set for your customers. Now, third point is to remind your customers what they pay you for. If you've got a customer who's treating you more like an unlimited information resource than a service provider, it's time to reiterate what you're paid to do for them. Now, you don't need to mention money necessarily. You can allude to it more delicately if you like by describing what your remit is, what you're contracted to do, what you've been brought on to do, what's within your scope, and so on. It's all saying the same thing. It's like, you don't pay me for this. If your client wants more from you and you're happy with that, you can discuss whether they'd like to pay more for that time. Now, consultancy is a service. Your skills are valuable. It takes you time to train and to learn and to gather these skills and expertise. So decide if you want to offer consultancy as a service. However, you do have to make that choice. If your client wants the consultancy but they want it for free, your business is subsidising their business. That's quite as simple as it is. And unless you'd expect to be able to walk into a shop and pick up anything that you want, either without paying or while paying a massively reduced price, you should probably see an issue with that. If you've got an agreement for the work that you do with your client, now might be a good time to pull it out and just remind them of its existence. If you don't have an agreement, it's time to lay some ground rules and do that in writing, and an email will do, and just lay out exactly how you work and how you're happy to work and what the fees cover. You know, you might have to allude to it. You might have to say, look, this is taking me too long, this is costing me too much, I'm happy to discuss these things with you, but, you know, for example, if you need a call to go over this piece of work regularly, I'm going to have to start charging you more. Now, the final option is pull the plug. Sometimes it just isn't worth the hassle. Now, you'll learn this pretty quickly as a freelancer. There are some clients out there who are just clingy pains in the bum. And the ironic thing is that it's often the clients who pay the least who want the most. Not that it would be acceptable behaviour from high-paying clients, you understand, but still, it's a bit of an extra kick in the teeth when somebody's paying you as little as possible for as much as possible. And you do have to start looking at people like that and thinking, If you're dealing with somebody who consistently oversteps your boundaries, you might just decide it's not worth your time. Now, I had this situation a while back. I tend to offer local clients an initial consultation meeting rather than a consultation phone call, if that's what they prefer. It's nice for me to get out and about. I usually get a nice coffee out of it. It's nice to chat face to face. And, it's no skin off my nose if they're in the local area. However, I had one prospective client. They had an initial meeting. Then they requested another, ostensibly with a view to going over something very specific before immediate commencement of a good, probably around $1,000 a month contract. So off I went, because you do have to be flexible with these things, especially if somebody's wanting to have a big spend with you. That involves a lot of work and therefore a lot of discussion. So off I went anyway, only to find that it was basically being used as a free advice resource on everything from how to liaise with their designer to how to set up a WordPress blog. Now, the fixed $1,000 a month spend had been reduced to a possible 50 to 100 quid a month, and even that was going to be delayed. So I finally managed to get the project cracking, despite clingy clients' need for constant reassurance, but then things ground to a halt. I couldn't get any of the information that I needed, but the client was constantly emailing and phoning and texting and requesting meetings, and usually about stuff well out of my remit. Now, eventually they did suggest another meeting, and I responded that I would be happy to meet, but that would need to start charging, because, and this is something that I'm going to come to, my standardised service involves one initial meeting. They'd already had two. What can you do? So instead of thinking that was okay, the client tried to invite me to the house for lunch in lieu of payment. And at that point, I just had to drop them a polite email saying, look, I'm sorry, I'm not in a position to help you. You're probably better off getting a VA. I'm happy to liaise with you in future if you ever need a copywriter. Because my goodness, come on. And needless to say, they've never been back in touch. They did thank me for the email, a little bit sheepishly. I've never heard from them again. And looking at their website, I can see that they've not ploughed ahead with any of the content work that they were wanting. So, I was getting my time wasted. Now, it can be really, really hard to drop a client. You can feel really angsty, not just about doing it in the first place, but about what you're going to do without the money that you would have got from them. But the fact is, clingy clients take up mental energy, they take up your time, and they take up resources that you just don't have, aside from the fact that it's just not okay. I think I'm quite a contrary person. And I think I can speak for Pip and say that she is as well. If something's just not okay on principle, that's usually a pretty good reason for us not to let it carry on. And we hope that, listeners to this podcast will also see that you have the right to set boundaries in your business just because it's your business. If you don't like something, as long as you're being reasonable about it, you don't have to like something, you don't have to take something on the chin, you don't owe anybody anything. So as long as your business can function successfully in the way you want it to, if you just don't like something, you just don't like something. And I don't like clingy clients. So you need to set your boundaries more firmly and find clients who will treat you like the professional business that you are, and find clients that fit with your idea of what's appropriate and what isn't. So what we're going to do now is take just a quick look at how to set boundaries from the outset. How to avoid this kind of thing happening again and again and again. So first piece of advice is do not ignore red flags and bad attitudes. And that seems like a bit of a weird one. If you've just heard from somebody, how can they be a clingy client who calls all the time? Well, of course they can't, but you start to notice little things that can sort of ring alarm bells in your head and make you think, this person might have potential for being a bit of a pain in the bum. So sometimes when you have an initial contact from a prospective client, they can set off little alarm bells in the back of your mind. When you start out freelancing or when you're having a bit of a quiet period, it can be tempting to take on work from anything with a pulse and a wallet. But that's not a way to build a business, not in the long term anyway. You need to acknowledge to yourself that you have the right to be choosy, as I say, about your clients. And it's all part of learning to say no. It's all part of that stuff that we talked about earlier. So my red flags then, what I would suggest watching out for in your initial contacts with prospects, is clients overstepping boundaries in the initial contact. So I've had prospects launch into diatribes about their ex-wives, rants about religion, and really, really dodgy flirting attempts. Much as I want their money, I don't want their bullshit, to put it really bluntly. So any kind of boundary overstepping in that sense is a pretty big red flag for me, because I think, you know, if I'm speaking to you for the first time and you're talking politics, religion, ex-wife, how nice you think I sound, or how pretty you think my picture is on my website, then what other boundaries are you going to not respect? You know, this is the kind of person that I think, probably don't want you as a client. Second red flag, clients who contact you at random hours is pretty self-explanatory. You know, if they try and make initial contact with you at kind of 8 p.m. on a Saturday, probably not the best client in the world. Clients who try to tell you what your job is. Now, this is an interesting one. You'll often get prospects telling you that work just needs editing, or it just needs reworking, or it just needs revising, or it just needs polishing up. You know, you get the picture. That might be the case, but from my experience, it's usually not. It's usually a way of a client minimising the work needed, making out like it's only a little bit of work, and making out that it should take you less time than it actually will. And the same goes for clients who are hostile when you tell them your fees or give them a quote or try and negotiate. If you get the impression that this person doesn't respect what you do, how long it takes you, or what it's going to cost them, they're worth avoiding. They tend to be the sort of clients that turn into, can you just? You know, and if they're not happy when you negotiate your fees initially, they're probably not going to be happy if you start saying to them, this is taking me much longer than it was supposed to, I'm going to have to charge you more. So, preparing for new clients. If you have had your fingers burnt by clingy, call-it-all-time clients, it's a good idea to start setting aside some time to prepare for new ones, and to stop it happening again, basically. So, know your services, know your working hours, know your preferred methods of contact. If you think it could be helpful, you can prepare a little client welcome pack. You know, you can do some standard PDFs just with your header and a little bit of information on them. You know, one for your services and prices, one with your working hours and your contact details, one with your contract, and so on and so forth, whatever's relevant to that client. You can implement communication standards. Now, if you standardise the way that you communicate with clients and prospects, that can ease the pressure of telling clingy clients where to get off. If you're working on a longer project, set contact levels before it starts. You might want to identify certain check-in points at, say, weeks 3, 5 and 7. Alternatively, you could have a check-in point for each identified stage, so draft 1, draft 2, amends 1, amends 2, whatever. Being proactive, being firm in your communications can help to ease the worry, because then your client knows when they're going to hear from you, and they've got less excuse to be contacting you just about little itty-bitty things in between. Likewise, I've got clients that I don't do longer pieces of work for, but I write regular blog posts for. So I let them know by email every Tuesday and Thursday that the blogs are up. It's just a simple email, hi blah, just to let you know the blogs are up, this is what they're about, yak blah, here's the URL, hope you're having a good week. Now, they rarely reply, they don't need to, but that's fine, they know what's what. And you can do something quite similar, always just make sure that you check in with clients every week or every fortnight, regardless of whether anything exciting's happened. And that way you're not worrying them and sending them into kind of clingy client territory with radio silence, because if you go quiet on people, they're more likely to kind of be a little bit, where have you gone, and it can send them into kind of, please tell me what's going on, email, call in the future, and it's never any fun. When it comes to clients who want to add little bits onto projects here and there, you know, little freebies, little can you justs, standardised email subject lines can be a lifesaver. So if you've got a client like that, you know, you can give an excuse for it that's not necessarily saying you're a clingy pain in the arse. You can say, just implementing something new for my email contact, so I can keep track of my projects a bit better. From now on, subject lines will talk about the project that we're working on and the stage that we're at. So Project X, Draft 1, Project X, Amends. Now, for my work, I tend to offer one round of amends as long as it's within the scope of the original brief. So that way, you'll be able to let your client know clearly where they stand, and it's also a good way of keeping record for invoicing. So, you know, if you've got Project X, Draft 1, and then the client comes back and they need some amends, you respond with Project X, amends when you send them the piece of work. If they want more amends, then it's amends 2. If they want more amends, it's amends 3. More amends, it's amends 4. And then by the end of it, you know what you can charge them extra for. And they can't argue because they've seen it all the way along. Likewise, I no longer work on Friday, so I've started putting an out of office on every Friday that says just that. I don't work Fridays and I'll get back to you on Monday. It's unequivocal. There's no need for if you have an urgent query, blah, 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 because I'm not an employee. I'm a supplier. I'm an independent business. If my clients have got an urgent query, that's, you know, sorry for them, but they just have to take it elsewhere. And that's a decision that I've made, and that's one that I stick to. And you can do the same with your phone. Get used to changing your answer phone message so that any clients who call are informed that you're not in the office and will get back to them when you are. You know, it's not difficult, and it's just a way of kind of diverting the behaviour without actually having to pick up the phone and say, no, I'm sorry, I'm off on annual leave today. You know, you can do it when you're off, say, midweek. If you've, like Pip, she's gone to the content marketing show. I saw that she'd popped an out of office on, you know, and you can do the same with your phone, like I say. Just say, I'm at the content marketing show for the next 3 days. If you need anything, please drop me an email and I'll get back to you on Monday. Great, fine, wonderful. So, final point is to look for patterns. Now, we've all got strengths and weaknesses in, you know, in ourselves, in our characters, and the way that we operate our businesses is no exception to this rule. Now, if you find that you're getting a lot of clingy clients who start to overstep your boundaries, ask yourself what the common factor is. Are you too accommodating when you start out? Do you take any client that comes your way? Do you source all your clients from freelancing websites? Do all your clingy clients come from one industry? There's any number of things it could be, either on your side or theirs. So try to be honest with yourself when it comes to your soft spots, because it's not about beating yourself up. It's about protecting yourself in future and just making sure that you don't attract any more of these clingies. So if you have other freelancers in your network, chat to them, you know, ask them how they deal with it. Ask them, if you know them well, what they think your weak spots might be. It's often easier for somebody outside the situation to view it objectively and say, well, I think X, Y, and Z might be a problem. Ask how they deal with X client or X scenario, or ask them how, you know, ask yourself how you would advise them to deal with the situation. And once you've highlighted a few areas for improvement, work at implementing those improvements there. You know, use the advice from this podcast. Develop systems and processes and standards. Take the burden off your shoulders and, you know, reduce the level of intimidation and vulnerability that you feel by taking the personal out of your business. It's not personal, it's just business. And that really does need to be your standard motto. You can be friendly with people during the day, and you've always got to be professional. There's no need to get your knickers in a twist with people. But your business is your business, and it's not going to run well unless you've got a clear distinction between work life and personal life. Now, it's much easier to defend a decision to a grumpy or a clingy or a hostile client if you can say, that's how my business works. It's the same for all my clients. That's just how it is. And if they don't like it, you're definitely better off without them. And no matter how worrying it might be, the headspace you will get from clearing out clingy clients or adapting their behaviour so that they're not clingy anymore and you can just get on with what they pay you for, it's brilliant. It will give you so much more time to look for better clients, look for higher paying clients, look for clients who know how to treat a freelance writer, and hopefully just have a bit of a peaceful life in future. So it's now time for the fabled, marvellous, mythical little bird recommendations of the week. Now, you know I hate these things, usually because Pip has some ingenious one and I'm there going, oh, look at this blog post. This time, it's pretty much the same thing. It's a blog post, but I think Pip will be pleased to know when she listens to this podcast that it is inspired by her. Now, Pip and I, when we do dual episodes, we record our episodes using Skype, and we use a Skype recorder. To do that, you know, we'll both be on Skype and then we'll set the recorder going. Well, it sets itself going, which is quite handy. And then you get a nice little MP3 at the end of it. You can amend that and then, boop, you know, podcast. Brilliant. The MP3 player, the MP3 recorder is now no longer compatible with Skype because Skype's pushing loads of updates. Now, I got an email from Pip a few days ago, a good few days ago, saying, ooh, Skype's getting pushy with its updates, we better do something about this. Skype only told me this morning, so tech bod Pip is 3 days ahead of Skype, knowing what's going on with Skype. So, yeah, Pip is definitely the tech bod here. So when I spotted this recommendation, I thought, right, it's one for all people like me who are not tech bods, but who need to tolerate tech and kind of, I would say pretend that we've got a grasp on it. I would say have some kind of grasp on tech, you know, because we're not all Pip, we're not all geniuses when it comes to all things techie. I know that my heart sinks when I see techie things appearing on the horizon. Pip goes over the horizon and looks for techie things, which is just ludicrous. It's a dreadful, dreadful thing. So this week's recommendation from me is something from the HubSpot blog. Yes, it's a blog post. And it's 35 tech terms translated into plain English. And I think it's brilliant. It's got all sorts in there. It's basically a glossary. And who doesn't love a glossary? What kind of freelance writer doesn't love a glossary? It's a glossary of things like Scrum, Showstopper, Waterfall Development, CDN, API, 301 Redirect. All these kinds of things that you might not think they'd be very useful for a freelance writer, but you'd be surprised, because the fact is, if you blog, if you upload things for clients, if you have to deal with anything on the net, and let's face it, if you're a freelance writer, you're on the net pretty much all day. It's good to know what these things are and to be able to express yourself if there's an issue, if your client needs something, you know, if they're asking you to upload something and it's not working, if there's an issue with your website. Unfortunately, tech can't be avoided. So this glossary, I think, is rather marvellous, and I'll pop the URL for that in the show notes, so that you can all enjoy this fabulous glossary of 35 tech terms translated into plain English. Pip obviously won't need it, because she probably wrote it, because she's such a tech pod, but we'll forgive her. So that brings us firmly then to the end of my solo episode, my resentful solo episode, A Little Bird Told Me, 77, which has all been about dealing with clients who just won't leave you alone. If you have any experiences of your own with Peter clients, pain in the arse clients, do let us know. You can come and chat to us at Facebook. We're on facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast. We love horror stories, as long as you don't name anybody, because we don't like libel. So, you know, just be a little bit sensitive. But yeah, there are over 100 now freelance writers and editors and wordy bods signed up to our Facebook page, so come and join them. It's a regular little hub of activity. You'll also find loads of links there. Also in the show notes, you will find the link to our Podomatic homepage, which is alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, and you can subscribe to these podcasts so that you never miss another episode, because why would you want to? So in the meantime, thank you so much for listening. I hope this has been a helpful introduction into how to get clients off your back and back into the zone that they belong in. If you have any questions, do of course come and have a chat with us. In the meantime, I've been Laurie Hartshorn. Thank you so much for listening, and Pip and I will catch you next time.